Okay, thank you, Ranjit, and thank you everyone for attending this. As the topic, as the title says, we're going to look at water yield and quality impacts of forest bioenergy programs. And this came off of two syntheses that were done in the past couple decades. First of all, forest bioenergy, it's gone from just being firewood to electricity and jet fuel. There's a picture here of a tanker in the Helsinki airport that pulled up and said biomass is our passion, bioenergy is our passion. The jet was being fueled by fuel that came from wood. And this is well developed in the Nordic countries, but it's building in the United States and Australia and elsewhere. And there's a lot of USA opportunities for it, you know, particularly in the western US, there's a lot of fuels that need removal. The first synthesis effort was in 1994, and I had a chapter on the impacts of harvesting practices on offsite environmental quality. And this was in a book by Dick et al. On impacts of harvesting on long-term site productivity. And the, I don't know if you're familiar with the IEA bioenergy groups, is that they have tasks that shift periodically. That usually a task is put together for 3 years, and then it may continue or move on, and they address different aspects of the bioenergy program. A second one was done in 2002, and had another chapter in there on environmental sustainability of forest energy production. And part of that was just looking at the hydrologic component of it. And this is in a book by Richardson et al. On bioenergy from sustainable forestry. Again, pulling the synthesis of what was known about forest bioenergy from the whole cycle of bioenergy, not just the environmental component. So what I'm going to do in this presentation is just talk about some of the water yield effects that that have been measured, and what sort of water quality impacts you could expect, and why that's important, and just talk about some conclusions. Forest watershed is very important. You know, it's a resource that we want to protect. We don't want to degrade it, and primarily because it's a source of water supplies. In the western United States, most of the water comes off of forested watersheds. Ultimately, but you add the eastern United States into that, the bulk of our municipal drinking water comes off of forested watersheds. And these areas have generally a consistent flow of water, and it's high quality. Anywhere you go in the world, you talk to the water supply managers, and their best quality comes from their forested watersheds. And then these are recreation sites. They have other uses. It's a big area for wildlife habitat. And then you have it's a source of wood as well. So there's multiple resources that come off there, but the water is one of the most valuable ones. So that's why in a forest bioenergy program, we want to protect the water quality and the quantity of it. One thing in this discussion you need to consider is always a scale effect. And you see this blue area that's in here right there. Let's say that may be a cut unit of some sort, whether it's a clear cut or a thinning or whatever. And if you analyze the water at the exit from that watershed, there may be a change measured there, but by the time you go to a larger watershed, we may have dilutions of 10 or more. Sometimes you can't even measure changes because of that. So a lot of what we'll be talking about, the known impacts occur on watersheds that were maybe 100% cut or treated and not a smaller portion of it. And I'll discuss why that's important just in a little bit. If you take a forested watershed, a lot of the studies that have been done through 4 or 5 decades, an entire watershed was gauged with some sort of gauging device to determine total flow, and then it was cut. But generally, the whole area was treated, not just a portion of it. And most of these were fairly small compared to some of the big watersheds that provide water for municipalities. We're going to talk about a few things about what can be impacted in the hydrologic cycle, from inputs, outputs, and why this is important. Of course, there's the basic hydrologic cycle from rainfall, and most of the water in forested watersheds we want to get infiltrates, and that's why it provides long-term water supplies. If you do something to the surface, expose too much of the soil, you get surface runoff, and that's where you get your degradation of water supply from sediment or from nutrients. So it's important to understand that. Another thing is that how is the rainfall distributed, and this can vary by ecosystems, but for most forested watershed, most of it's put over here 80-91% is infiltrated water, and that's the water that's going to filter down through the system and over a long period of time provide base flow, which gives you your water supply for years, months, or weeks. If it runs off, if you shift it over on this side, it doesn't infiltrate and runs off, then it comes off in minutes and hours, and in between you don't have much. So that's why the forested watersheds are so important, because most of their water is on the infiltrated side. We want to leave the watershed in condition that's going to do that. Another thing that's necessary to understand is how the streams respond to rainfall. This is just sort of a schematic of a watershed. It's a shallow soil, but you could also be a cut unit. And that as you go through the storm hydrograph, you know, we proceed along here, and more of the watershed wets up and provides flow that comes out of there. This is the storm flow response. And it's necessary to understand that. A lot of the storm flow response can come, what's called quick flow or interflow. But generally, the watersheds, the most reliable supplies are base flow. Aspect's another thing that affects how much water comes off these watersheds. This is just some graph from the Coweta Hydrologic Lab in western North Carolina. It's in the Appalachians. And looking at watersheds with northerly aspects and southerly aspects, the blue line here. And this is the reduction in forest cover in percentage. And so even if you come out here to 100, there's a big difference in the amount of water yield that comes off of watersheds that are cut. So if you have a north-facing watershed, you're there. South-facing watershed, you're going to get there. It's solely an evapotranspirative loading function. Another thing is there's watersheds are apples and oranges, and some of them are very responsive and some are not. And here's just showing you an example how geology and soils can interact with how water production. This is in Michigan. There's two rivers, the Salt River and the Manistee. The salt's in the blue line, and you can see snowmelt runoff, and here you can see summer storms. It's very flashy, and the reason there is that most of the soils are fairly fine textured, they're clays, and so they don't infiltrate water very fast and respond very quickly. However, the Manistee River is just sort of flat across the whole year. Well, if you're doing some disturbance of the forest on the Manistee River, nothing as much is going to happen. It doesn't produce any much sediment because everything virtually infiltrates, and so the water yield is fairly constant. Versus the Salt River, you could probably have some problems because you're getting more surface runoff on that watershed. So this is another thing in analyzing the effects across different watersheds. Another effect can be slope. This is just some example of a cumulative loss of sediment off of two watersheds in Texas that were burned a year apart. But you see a difference in the sediment production between the 15-20% slope watershed and the 45-53% slope. So slope is a very big factor in how these watersheds produce sediment and whether a bioenergy operation is going to affect that particular parameter of water quality. And any analysis of water quality or water yield effects, you're going to try to look at the full life cycle of bioenergy. Generally, we tend to focus here on the harvest, and that's where most of the data are. But transport, as discussed in a little bit, is a big factor. Storage, not so much. Power production, as these two are only point source problems for water quality. And in many cases, the ash is put back into the forest since replanted. So most of the information we have is on this side of the bioenergy cycle, but not on the rest of it. A look at water quantity. What happens when you harvest forests for bioenergy or for anything else? There's a graph here of the response of cut forests, and this is for the 100% clear cuts. We have precipitation on the bottom of millimeters per year, and we have the increased stream flow that you see. And the solid black line is undisturbed forests. As you go from forests around 500 millimeters of annual precipitation up to 2,500, you have an increase in water yield. And as if you cut it, you get an even bigger increase in water yield. However, if you only cut about, this is for the black lines are for 100% cut. If you only cut half of a watershed or half of the watershed you analyzed has been cut, well, it's reduced to that. And then if you're down to 25%, it gets down, so we're getting back down close to that line. And actually, if you get under 25%, the green line, you can't really measure any significant differences between cut areas and uncut areas. And again, this gets back to that scale factor. If you're only treating a small portion of a larger watershed, you're not likely to see many water yield changes. Water quality. There's a lot of data in this. I'm not going to throw a lot of graphs up there, but generally the mean nitrate-nitrogen increases have ranged from 0.1 to 0.5 if you look across a whole range of studies. Again, it's a concern because you have a water quality standard of 10 milligrams per liter for nitrate-nitrogen. So generally you don't see big increases. There are some outliers, and some studies show some sizable increases. But usually those have something unusual about them. The biggest case in point was a study at Hubbard Brook where they had an increase of 10 milligrams per liter nitrate nitrogen. Well, that was because they cut this forest that had a high nitrogen load, then it herbicided it and prevented a regrowth. So you have to look at those and carefully examine why they are the way they are. Sediment increases. Sediment's a bigger problem, and you can see increases ranging from 199% to 65,000%. And this is a function, again, a lot of slope, how much soil was disturbed, how much surface runoff occurs compared to base flow. And particularly with sediment, BMPs are very important, very necessary for maintaining water quality. A couple points to make out is that with sediment, the biggest problems are roads. And look at study after study after study. It's the roads that cause the problems. It's not the cutting of the forest, but it's the road system. And roads consider everything from main roads all the way down to temporary logging roads. These areas tend to channel water that goes down the roads and into the streams, as this one was doing. Another thing you need to understand is the particular geomorphology of the watershed. And this is sort of an extreme example, but it shows you. This is a watershed in Arizona with a cut bank here. The stream is incised over a couple centuries, but the stream bank provides the bulk of the sediment going into that stream, not any land management activity upstream. So there you need to understand the local geomorphology and functions. Just to show you that things can be done right, here is, we did put in a study in Tasmania. We're harvesting right up to the stream side, but we use best management practices of using tracked machines, which this is, leaving a lot of slash on the ground. And there was a 10-meter machinery exclusion zone, and the bottom line, there was no increase in sediment or in turbidity in the river. So it shows that it can be done. So in summary, water yield responses can be variable. There's no real significant effects of nutrients on water quality. Sediment increases occur, but they can be controlled, and it's very important to use best management practices, and whether it's a bioenergy harvesting or other type of harvesting. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Where's that photo?
This one? That's Arizona.
That's what I had.
No questions. One, okay, good one.
My question is, you have so many graphs saying that when you have it,
increases the stream.
Well, yes, harvesting does increase stream flow, and you can actually measure it on a watershed that's completely cut. But as I showed in that diagram, as you go from there, let's say you cut 100 hectares, but then you're collecting water at a watershed of 1,000 hectares, you're probably not going to be able to measure any significant increase in stream flow. And it does increase because you're changing the whole evapotranspiration.